This is the Rebel HR Podcast, the podcast about all things innovation in the people space. I'm Kyle Rode. Let's start the show. Welcome back, Rebel HR community. Extremely excited for the guest today. A lot of times when I have a guest on, we have a conversation ahead of time. I had to stop that conversation because we were already getting into some super juicy content. So really excited for the conversation. With us, we have Dr. Terry Bader. She is a groundbreaking thinker and expert in the field of consciousness, personal growth, and the underlying forces that shape our world. She is the author of the recently published book, Flip Your Switch, A User's Guide to a Whole New Mind. Dr. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kyle, for having me. I'm also very excited, holding my tongue, ready to jump in.
Yeah, absolutely. I am just really excited for this conversation. Before we hit record, we were talking about some of the challenges that we all face and as it relates to what you describe as becoming a love conscious human. And I'm really excited to explore that, especially in the context of what we talk about on this show, which is how to really incorporate that in the world of work as an HR professional or a leader of people. So the first question I want to ask you, it revolves around your reason for writing this book. What motivated you to write a book about flipping your switch?
I spent decades figuring this out and was finally, getting somewhere with what it means to be conscious. What are the different types of consciousness? How do we deploy this? I'm a leadership coach. How do we get this into the world? How do we fast track people into this higher level of consciousness? And how do we, shift the economic and social structures that are holding us down? And all, so I'm getting all of this finally, right? And then I get sick. And I was like, oh no, if I die, it's gone. Therefore, you need to write this down. You need to write this down. So it was about 10 years in the making of the book. I took my time because I really wanted it to be readable and usable. It's about 52 chapters, couple pages per chapter, a chapter per week for a year.
Wow. So, just hearing that, first of all, every once in a while, and maybe you have an answer for this. Every once in a while, I will hear somebody tell me something and it's like, just like goosebumps, but not like normal goosebumps, like goosebumps on the back of my neck. Like I'm, like every once in a while, I listen to a song that I'm like, oh yeah, this is it. Like I'm connected. And I just got that when you were describing your rationale for the book. And I think, my interpretation of that is it's true. You had an experience in your life and you realize this is finite, right? The time on this earth, and I need to make sure that the truth that I've discovered is put out there. So powerful insight. When you had that revelation and when you started putting down your truth into this book, what were some of the ways that you went around that? How did you start the process of figuring out where to start with putting this down into a usable format that people can interpret?
Well, I wrote the book about six times over, just so you know. It was like, because I read a lot of leadership books. I read a lot of psychology and all of this. And I read a lot of high level academia, and it is pedantic. Sometimes I literally have to listen to some like really jazzy pop music while I'm banging my head trying to do this reading. So I can like really get my blood flowing and get to the next chapter, and I'm scribbling notes and in this like hyperactive thing, and then I go in and out of it. So yeah, I wanted this to be really real for people. So now I kind of got off topic there. But anyway, I started with what I call an epiphany box. So as I have scraps of paper and post-its and just, I always have notebooks everywhere and I write things down and I rip it up and put it in the epiphany box. I'm with a client, I'd have two notebooks. I'm writing down notes for the client and what I need to like guide them through. And then I'm also writing epiphanies of what's happening at a higher level, what I'm realizing as I'm with the person having this, you know, thing. And I get a lot of downloads. Okay, let's be clear. I'm one of those people. And so I'm often multitasking through what I'm doing. I'm doing the normal day-to-day stuff. And on another level, I'm doing something else, which is incredibly internal. And you know, like, that is a part of being human. And that is the connectivity that we have with one another. That's how it works.
Absolutely. For me, what you're describing resonates as a musician. It resonates as like a download from the universe or something, like where it's like, oh, I have these notes and I have to put mm-hmm. them out somewhere, right? Or like some level of improv. Maybe it's a pattern. Maybe it's some sort of like picture of, for me, it's like a picture of nature that I need to try to put into a musical format. But I think what you're talking about is it's like this higher level of consciousness. And one of the things that your book digs into is a concept of consciousness that is new to me. And that's love consciousness. And you've got, there's two different types. There's love consciousness and war consciousness. And so as you came to this discovery and as you kind of, you found the right term to explain this level of consciousness, what do we need to know about love consciousness and how can that help shape our lives and really the world at large?
Well, let's start with the war consciousness, because the war consciousness is really easy for people to identify and feel. And that is us and them. Mm. Or I'm winning, I'm competing. Somebody, you know, somebody's right, somebody's wrong. Somebody's up, somebody's down. That zero sum equation that we see that is like so hyper transactional, and the sum is always zero. Mm. There's never any real added value. It's just you or me. Somebody, you know, like I win, you lose. That's the way it is, you know. And that's actually very man-made. It's founded in social constructs that are erroneous about how the nature of consciousness. And we use it all the time, especially in business and relationships, to get what we want from somebody. For ourselves, without get the most, give the least. That is war consciousness, and that is the basis of why we have wars as humans.
Right.
Now, on the other end of that, and that's kind of what I tap into when I'm with the client, when I'm trying to be creative, when I'm when you know you're being your best self, you're tapping into a place where you realize that the actual nature of consciousness is love conscious. And I'm not talking about, obviously, about romantic love. I'm talking about compassionate loving kindness. We see ourselves in others. We realize that we're all parts of a whole. We're complementing one another rather than competing with each other. We realize that it's not the zero sum operation, but that there's always some added energetic value to absolutely everything we do. It's a constellation fashion thinking where in that, like in business, we talk about synergy, where one plus one equals three, because the sum of the parts is greater. The outcome is greater than the sum of the parts because something else is happening. And that something else is connection. Complementarity, comprehending, compassion, where we're actually understanding a greater whole of the world, how it works, and ourselves. We allow all those different parts of self to show up and to unify into a whole human being.
Absolutely. I love that. It sounds similar to, you know, the practice of metta. Or, you know,
yes.
You know, using the term like loving kindness. And I love how you tied it into what one of my favorite corporate buzzwords, which is synergy, because it can mean so much and it can mean absolutely nothing depending upon the context of when you're using it, right? Like cross-functional synergy is like, you just throw that out and like the board of directors is like, oh yeah, you know, round of applause, mission accomplished, go take your seat. But what struck me as you described that is like the problem is a lot of times we are still using that concept with that war consciousness, right? So you're using quote synergy, but you're still, it's an I win, you lose proposition, not like a win-win or a love consciousness as you've described. Yes. So I love this yes. kind of this difference. And so is this the switch? Is this the flipping of the yes. switch that you're talking about? Okay.
Yes.
Walk us through this.
You just put your finger on something really, really relevant. It's not the thing that is war conscious or love conscious. Like synergy is not love conscious or war conscious per se. It's a function in reality that shows up and can be weaponized in war consciousness or utilized in love consciousness. Mm. Think of it in a very dumbed down way as a blade. So how many of us have had surgery that has greatly improved our lives because somebody cut us open? It's a knife. Somebody cut us open. But it was done from what perspective? It was done from love consciousness. It was done from a place of creation and healing. I'm going to do something to make this person's life better. I might be using a blade, but I'm making this person's life better. I am generative. Or we can look at a blade that's being used to steal from somebody, mug somebody, terrify somebody, or literally stab somebody. So we're taking life. We are weaponizing that blade and we're using it to get something for what we think is for ourselves in a very, very, you know, Grinch-hearted, petty-minded way, living from a very low level of consciousness. And then you're taking. That's the weaponization from a place of war consciousness, where war consciousness, I mean, it is poverty consciousness. It's coming from a place of lack, of competition. I need to capture, contain, and control things out there because I'm so afraid in here.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, so much of this just, it just makes perfect sense. And I love that. I love that the paradigm of the weaponize or utilize, right? And I think about that in the context of the work that we do in leadership and in human resources. So often it is that war consciousness, even if we try to pretend like it's not. And I think a lot of this is like, it's our conditioning, right? I mean, I remember going through business school however many decades ago, and literally in the curriculum was the art of war, right? One of the, and this is like, you look at all these like books, this is in all of these literature lists of like required reading to be a, you know, an effective business strategist, et cetera. And it's literally in the title. Right. So I would argue, yes, there are things you need to understand about it, but that doesn't mean that those are tactics or strategies that you use. But so often we fall into that trap, right? And even if we have best intentions, it's easy to fall into that war consciousness. So for those of us that have this desire to operate on a different level of consciousness and to flip our switch, what are areas that we need to really like really ground level, just start to change the things that we do in order to start to shift our consciousness from war to love?
Okay. Thank you for that question. First off, I'm going to tell you about how the book is structured because this is very helpful. It's in three parts: knowledge, know-how, knowing. Part one, it's a new education. I take apart some things and it's really not academic. I took all the brainy stuff out of it as much as possible to really make it heart-centered, real, grounded for real people, everybody. And so the first part is understanding your mind in a new way, debunking a bunch of constructs that you've been programmed with that are holding you back. Part two, what you can do or think about to develop some kind of a know-how and practice being different in your growth kind of thing. And number the third part is the knowing, like how to tap into your higher self, that place that is more like I was talking about earlier, where I'm constantly doing two things at once. Mm-hmm. I'm being in two places at once. I'm being here right now, but I'm also up here in a place of knowing and being like, okay, when do I need to draw from there? So when we're in war consciousness, which is ubiquitous, it's everywhere. Okay. It's coming at us in so many ways. And we need to kind of learn how to swim in that turbulent water. And then we need flotation devices, and we need to beach ourselves sometimes to rest and recover. You know, that's where like the prevention of burnout. And the reason we have burnout is because of war consciousness in the workplace and in society. If we didn't have that, we wouldn't have burnout. Burnout is the symptomology of that. Mm. So there are constructs, and I'm going to give you a couple of basic ones that show up in part one of the book, which are easy to pinpoint that we can all debunk. The first one, the happiness formula is a lie. Mm. The happiness formula is something like, once I get the right car, the right house, the right spouse, the right job, the right dress size, go to on the right vacation, my kids get into the right school, I have the right friends, some, you know, like once I have all of these elements, they will eventually add up and equal happiness.
Sure. The American dream, right?
Right?
Give me the picket fence and I'm happy.
Never has worked for anybody. Never will. It's a complete lie. And that's something we all have to dig into very, very deeply as individuals and understand it, because the lie is coming at us all the time. It's coming in movies, in books, and everywhere we look, and the people around us are repeating the lie over and over and over again about, you know, like, that's why shiny stuff sells. Who needs shiny things? Seriously. I mean, like the counter movement is kind of like minimalist in the materialistic world, but it's like, really? So that happiness formula is very bad for us, and you have to flesh it out, and that takes work. It takes a little bit of shadow work, because you have to notice within yourself how it's hooking you and getting you involved in giving away your energy, your blood, sweat, and tears, your time towards things that actually have no value. Because happiness is a state of being. No amount of stuff or getting anything right will ever make you happy.
Absolutely. So for everybody that's taking notes right now, just like write like everything you know and then a big X through it or everything you've been told. And I think about it like, I think about it. So we'll go back to HR, because that's most of these listeners. So I'll bring you back, listeners, as much as I just loved it, would love to explore this like consciousness thing. I know some of you are like, okay, don't get too woo-woo, Kyle, as much as I would love to. But the reality is like, this is what we're told in human resources all the time, right? Like, just get this employee engagement score from X to Y and everybody will be happy and everything will be great. Just get this person from X to Y, they'll be happy. Give them a thing, give them a raise, give them a promotion, give them a title, give me, you know, it's all materialistic stuff, right? It's an external thing that you're trying to exert to manipulate somebody to be happy. The reality is that's an internal exercise. That's an internal experience. And one of the things I personally struggle with, and we talked about this before, hit cord, like is trying to retain this internal joy and happiness at work, right? Like not flipping that switch involuntarily because I've been conditioned to flip a switch and switch my consciousness into this HR automatron. Mm-hmm. It's a zero sum game, right? And it's, we have to do this in order to achieve X or Y.
Right.
Or
and that, so that if then formula is actually a red flag of when you're in war consciousness, mm-hmm. because war mm-hmm. consciousness is a binary thing. It's if this is, then we get that, you know, and you said, like you said, manipulate. And if you're calculating and manipulating, fundamentally, you're in what I call left brain lockdown and you're not integrating the right mind, which is about human connection and your emotions and what it means to be a humane resource professional.
I love that, by the way. Add the E. I love that. Mm-hmm. Not just human resources, humane resources. So left brain lockdown. So, okay, now we're really getting into it. So this is the stuff that like fascinates me. You know, we spend so much time trying to figure out systems and equations and calculations and all these things and trying to like hack, right?
Yes.
And program and do these things. But the reality is like we are trying to do these with groups of human beings who are super messy, not black and white. Like it's so right brain, it's not even funny. But we're trying to exert this like left brain into the right brain formula. And you know, my assumption or my theory here is that there has to be a little bit of both, but it's not a binary thing, right? There's no, you know, black and white. There's never black and white. And so when we know, oh shit, now I'm in left brain lockdown. Here we go. I am like trying to, you know, flip a switch into robot HR Kyle, and I need to switch back into humane love consciousness Kyle. When we observe it, what are some tactics or strategies where we can bring ourselves back to the humanity that we need to display as professionals?
So a lot of that is about your inner journey. Okay. And you talked about it in the first person, and that's great because that's really where it's happening. And so a lot of times when we're in war consciousness, we can catch ourselves trying to push and make something happen. Okay. Red flag. All right. Step back. What is that? What needs to happen? I like to use in my coaching the open questions. What does great look like? What needs to happen? How would we get there? Who can help? What is actually important here? Where are the priorities? So it's like stepping back, because what it helps open the mind into a little bit more of a constellation fashion thinking, which is structurally what's happening in your right mind. And your thoughts can go to a more creative place of how you might solve something rather than shove something down somebody's throat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we catch ourselves, and that's, and I'm really no judgment, because it's just the way we've been programmed. So I literally call it patch reprogramming in my process. And that's part two of the book, is the patch reprogramming. All the little things you can do to figure out how to backtrack on some of your habits and ways of thinking and doing, which are not serving you. So if you're feeling bad, mad, or sad, probably that's a red flag too. Look at what's going on. Feelings are not there to be justified or spewed onto other people. Feelings are there to be felt and walked through. They are wonderful flags, signals that tell you something is happening. So it's an invitation to investigate within, not to make somebody wrong out there. The minute somebody's right and somebody's wrong, you're in war consciousness yet again.
Mm.
I mean, there's just so many things that you can start to see. If you're judging rather than discerning, that's a whole chapter, you are in war consciousness. Because discernment is neutral and open. Judgment is where you infuse priorities or better than, less than values to something according to how you, something in your past or some other irrelevant thing that you're infusing into it, your emotions, your ideas, your philosophies that are personal and shouldn't be there. It's not discernment, it's judgment. I mean, that's how we get prejudice, right?
Right, right.
So this is about this whole mental emotional shift. We all have a mental emotional landscape. And for decades, people have been throwing society and business and the systems that we're working in, including the economic models that we work with, are throwing war conscious seeds onto our emotional and mental landscape all day long. So we have a lot of weeding to do to get a little clarity from which we can then start to say, hey, this is fertile ground for something else.
Absolutely. There's so much there that we've got a whole nother podcast just in the last 5 minutes of commentary. But, you know, a couple of things I want to call out that I think are really, you know, kind of worth digging into a little bit. I love the concept of discernment versus judgment. And I think so often we can fall into the trap as professionals of judge, and sometimes judge, jury, and executioner, right? Where it's you're making a judgment on somebody's actions, and then you're making a judgment on what the consequences of those actions are. And so it's so easy, especially in my category of employment, where I've been doing this for 2 decades now, to just fall into these patterns. So what did we do last time this type of thing happened? Well, this is what we did. We did this, termination. Or this, written warning, final. And our brains, you know, like wire themselves this way because, you know, we operate off of these patterns of behavior and what worked in the past, well, it's probably going to work in the future. That's how human beings, you know, operate. We're like computers programs in that regard, right? But if we're doing that, we are in that wrong level of consciousness. We're judging. We're not discerning. And it's, you know, I guarantee you that many of us listening here are probably thinking the same thing. There have been a number of times where had I not asked a slightly different question before rendering a decision, I would have made the wrong decision, right? And so it's that that's, again, flipping that switch from judgment to discernment. And then I think the other thing too is a lot of times we try not to be emotional, right? Like we're told not to be emotional. You know, that's not business appropriate or not in the workplace. And, you know, to leave, you know, your life at home and, you know, become a different human being at work. But the reality is those emotions are ever present. And if you don't deal with them, they're going to make you sick, right? I mean, you have to. And your employees, your teams are all dealing with these same things. And you know, what I think, you know, my theory on the modern workplace is that we are actually seeing the symptom of this, where you've got an entire generation of individuals who have said, and sometimes it's not generational, who have just said, I'm done with this. Like I'm bringing my whole self. And sometimes that's a little messy. Sometimes we're not sure how to deal with it. But my argument for this is very natural because we're all human beings. And so it's really bringing humanity back into the workplace as my argument would be we should, right? We are all human beings. And what is an organization but a collection of human beings? And so I promise I'll stop editorializing and get to the question. But where my question lies is, as we think about this on a broader level, and as we think about this like on an organization-wide level, my assumption is that in order for this to work, you have to have the right plane of consciousness, right? You have to be out of war consciousness and into love consciousness as an organization. And so as you're doing some of this inner work, and as you're recognizing some of these patterns and issues externally, what are your areas of recommendation, or what can we do as we observe this in ourselves and in our organizations in order to make this more of a collective and comfortable effort broadly?
There's so much that we can do. First off, I love what you said about bringing the whole human and how it's messy. So just so you know, in the first part of my book, I address that messiness with a new mental model, which is very simplified, about how to show up your whole self in work and how to consciously curate yourself on a daily basis by using a set of three different personas: your professional, your personal, and your private personas. And so how do you show up differently in these three levels of self? And how do you choose to show up in different situations at work or even in the family? So you can constantly be a whole human being. You don't have to separate or cut parts off of yourself. You just need to put them in different places. Like sometimes you put certain aspects of yourself kind of in your back pocket because that's not going to help you right now. But then it's still in your back pocket. You didn't go away. You didn't leave it at home. It's still there. And so I'm giving people an internal model, a mental model that they can use to consciously curate. And this works great. It's worked great with all of my clients. It's pretty instantaneous once you understand and apply the model. We can talk about this more at a later time because I don't have time to go into it right now, but it's incredibly useful. So that messiness can be mitigated so that you can happily show up and not feel like you're going to get your head cut off if you show up as a whole human being, because it can be scary if you bring your vulnerability to the table. So this is the way to do it consciously and to curate that showing up whole. Now, you're talking about the whole organization. Surprisingly, you don't need 51% of the organization to be on board with this. A lot of times, anywhere between 8 to 12% of the population of a group is enough if they're being what we call integral or love conscious leaders, meaning they've gone beyond and they become, or servant leaders is another name we have for them. And so if you have enough members of leadership and executives doing this, even middle managers doing this, or maybe the HR team is leading the charge with this, you can get the culture of the organization to naturally shift. It's like the group mind will shift if you get enough people living, behaving, and thinking, and feeling in the state of love consciousness. This connected state of being. And it's not woo-woo at all. It's actually incredibly strategic. Not strategic in the way of like the war conscious strategy, I'm going to win something. No, in the strategy, I'm going to create something that is more. I'm going to add value to my organization by showing up in a certain way that's going to help shift everybody here. And when leaders do that, it's amazing what happens to productivity.
You've done all the research, but yeah, it's all there, right? Like you can look at all the polls, you can look at the Gallup, you can look at the terms that we use for this, like engagement, productivity, influence. I do think it's fascinating, the research as it relates to like the higher frequencies of behavior and higher frequencies of consciousness and the fact that it does only take a small handful to reverberate throughout an organization. And whether that's a community or a nonprofit or a for-profit, whatever, like once you get enough levers and influencers in the right positions, you will see the change, and good things happen. Right. And, and sometimes we don't realize it's happened until like we look in the rearview mirror and we're like, oh, but we're going to go full circle here. the reality is the people that have figured this out are happy the entire way, because it's not about the destination. It's about being happy internally and enjoying the journey to that, right? And eventually you get there and you're like, oh, that was great. Oh, hey, look how wonderful this has been and how successful we've been, right?
Well, the happiness is like the low-hanging fruit of the whole process. It's like your immediate gratification of like getting onto this love consciousness path thing. This like becoming this new form of human, elevating yourself. It's like suddenly it's like, I just feel so much better. And like, and my tummy's not upset all the time. And like, my wife is so nice to me these days. And I think my kids are awesome. Like, and it's just, there's like this whole shift that happens in every level of human engagement with people, or even with nature, or taking care of yourself, or understanding what's important and what's not important, and making those choices that were like such hard choices before. They're no longer hard choices. They're obvious.
Right. Right. It's, and I think about it like not to get like back to like left brain, but it, like, I think about it like it's a logical equation, right? Like if you're happy, then, you know, that's how you're going to show up. And, you know, you're going to make better decisions because you're in a better headspace when bad stuff does happen, because it's going to happen, but you're still happy. And so like that doesn't make you unhappy. But it might create some emotion, but your happiness will help. You know, like it just makes so much sense. And with that, I'm going to go back to, for those that are like all in, like, okay, how do I keep digging into this? The book again is Flip Your Switch, A User's Guide to a Whole New Mind. We are barely just scratching the surface, and I'm just really excited for our listeners to pick this up and check this out. With that being said, we are coming to the end of our time together. And as much as I would just love to nerd out with you for another 3 hours, you're super busy and I want to respect your time. We're going to switch gears. We're going to go into the Rebel HR Flash Round. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. Here we go. Question number one. Where does HR need to rebel?
I think, and I've seen this because I work a lot with HR professionals, the L&D people tend to migrate towards me, right? Makes sense.
Sure.
The best way for them to rebel in their organization to make themselves and everybody else happier, more productive, is to basically get the book or call me or do a retreat or do something to get yourself on track. It's you. There's nothing out there that's going to make it work. It's you. It's your thoughts. It's your feelings. It's how you curate your emotional and mental landscape that will splash over onto other people. And if you are blessed to have enough connectivity with other HR professionals within your organization, you can create a little nugget of love consciousness and understanding that can have more impact. You can have like this pure positive critical mass quicker by just getting a few buddies together and doing it together in HR.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. You know, I've said this on a number of episodes, but like the change, like the ownership for the change, like if not us, then who, right? Like we have some ownership, and what's so exciting is we have the ability to do this, right? Like we have an opportunity, and in my mind, like that means that we really should actually have a mandate to do this, right? Like this should be like top, you know, you got your strategy plan. Like this should be like number, like on the top, like do this work, right? That ultimately this is what will help your organization be successful. This is what your leaders want you to do. They just might not know how to articulate that.
Right.
But that's what they're looking for. So do the work, figure it out. And you know what? Sometimes it's like, this can be uncomfortable.
Oh, very.
But it's worth it, right? It's so worth it. Couldn't agree more. Question number two, who should we be listening to?
Number one you should be listening to what I talk about in part three of the book, which is your daemon, your higher self, your creative self. There's lots of names for it. Lots of names for it. There's no node in the brain for it, but we know it exists from, you know, I don't know, maybe 5,000 years worth of research and understanding and psychology and whatever, like your higher self. Listen to your higher self. It is often a very small whisper. The ego self, the petty self, and the Grinch heart self are always shouting, what about me? What about me? What about me? Listen to your daemon. I like the word daemon. It's the ancient Greek term for it because to me it sounds like a diamond. And it's like this jewel that is in you, your higher self. It knows. First and foremost, listen to it.
I love that. So I'm a big believer in meditation and practicing that. And to me, I love the visualization of like, there's like a rough sea out there, right? And it's all the stuff. There's all these things happening out there and there's crashing oceans and everything. But if you get down below the waterline, it's calm and cool and like, and true and honest. And it's like, you have to find that version of yourself and whatever term you use for it. I like the term daemon. That's nice, to think about, but, it's so often we try to like get rid of it.
Yep. Right?
Like, nope, this doesn't make sense. Like it might not be logical in the moment.
Mm-hmm. In the moment.
But there's You'll a reason.
Yeah. A lot of times there's great wisdom in it. It's just that when we get the wisdom, we're not quite sure what it means yet. Like it'll take a while for it to unfold.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, you do have to get to that stillness point. And I'm also a meditation teacher and practitioner. So, yeah, I know that.
Yeah. We won't go that deep on this podcast, but I can go back like over the last like 4, 5, 6 years, I can go back and I can pinpoint moments where I did listen to it and pinpoint moments where I didn't. And, you know, eventually you get to a point where you can like start to trace these things back and realize, oh, okay, this was, this was the right thing to listen to. This was not. That's part of the learning, but you got to start somewhere. All right. Final question. How can our listeners reach out, connect with you and get their hands on the book?
The book is on Amazon. It's Barnes and Nobles. It's pretty much everywhere. You can get in touch with me mostly via my website, which is whitelilycoaching.com. White lily like the flower. whitelilycoaching.com. You can reach me on Instagram, Dr. Terry Bader 1. You can reach me on LinkedIn, Dr. Terry Bader. That's pretty much it. I mean, I'm out there, pretty easy to find. If you Google Dr. Terry Bader, it pops up in lots of different places. So, yeah. And please do reach out. Any questions? I am happy to serve.
Love it. And we'll have all that information in the show notes. Open up the podcast player. You can click right in. We'll have a link to the book. Strongly encourage anybody to get their hands on it. Even if it's not something that you've really thought about in the context of your job, I guarantee you that there are going to be some insights that will be helpful for you on a personal level, and ultimately that will help you on a professional level as well. So Dr. Terry, thank you so much for spending the last few minutes with us, imparting some of your knowledge and ultimately for writing this book and putting this out there. I really sincerely appreciate the time with you today.
Thank you, Kyle. It's been an honor.
Thank you. All right, that does it for the Rebel HR podcast. Big thank you to our guests. Follow us on Facebook at Rebel HR Podcast, Twitter at Rebel HR Guy, or see our website at rebelhumanresources.com. The views and opinions expressed by Rebel HR Podcast are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of any of the organizations that we represent. No animals were harmed during the filming of this podcast. Baby.